like you. And with strength, Master kept me as I repent. And he said, well, God bless you, community family, and welcome to Game Talk Radio Online. We're so happy to have this important time with you because if you've ever heard of our show, you know we stay in this lane, and if you understand the gang violence that hurts our community, you know why we're here. So God bless you once again, and welcome to this show. And as you heard, we open with an homage to Maurice White from Earth, Wind, and Fire because he recently passed away. And like so many of our artists, they actually left us a living legacy in their work. So we love Earth, Wind, and Fire, always have. They've had a positive message, and we thought it was a good idea to open with that, especially tonight, given what's happened in our community. So before we get into any detail, I always like to introduce our precious co-host, because Skip Townsend is so faithful in this work and so committed, and he's out on the front line every day. So, Skip, I just want to thank you for what you've become and what you do and for being a part of this, too.
Yeah, Sister Heron, as always, I give honor and praise to God. I'm grateful to be here, thankful to be a part of Gang Talk Radio. And I'm a little embarrassed right now. I'm, you know, just embarrassed to be a human being, you know, well, with the things that are going on. But I'm grateful to be here, grateful to God, and thank you for your determination, your steadfast commitment at Gang Talk Radio.
Well, you know what? It's all of us in this together. It's all of us in this together, and that's the most important message we try to share with our listeners every week. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about all of us.
Yes.
It's about all of us and acting like the village we used to kind of claim to be.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I'm part of the village. I got on my dashiki. I got on my African stuff. Don't you see my connection?
Right.
And then they go home, take that off, and disappear. You right. see, so we're trying to wake up the spirit in the black nation to get involved in our business.
Right.
We're not chasing anybody else's business but our own.
Right.
And before, because you know I'm a little upset, and so before we get into that very intense conversation, I do want to thank Dr. Cecil Chip Murray.
Oh, my God.
And the dear former police commissioner, John Mack. More importantly, the leadership of the Los Angeles Urban League for so many decades that impacted both you and myself.
You know, I was so honored and humbled to be a part of that dialogue last week, to sit next to a man who, John Mack, I got so much admiration for him, and he actually admires the work that I do. And that is just one of them tingling feelings, you know, like, wow. And Cecil Murray, you know, I tell him all the time, they make a mistake. Every time I go somewhere with Cecil Murray, they have him speak before me. And I always tell him that was a mistake because I'm taking all of that. Everything you say, I go out when you're not around, Cecil Murray, and I say it to other people and I get all the accolades, but it's really him.
Yes.
A lot that I've learned come from those two men, and
yes.
I'm just truly grateful to have been a part of sitting on the panel with them.
Yes, filled with wisdom.
Yes, indeed.
The leadership from our history
right.
that the young people haven't had a chance to see.
Right.
Because that's the reason we're on the air. Because
yes.
they haven't had people in their arena like these two men. So it was very important. And we're just so blessed that they agreed to come
right.
and talk to us. And we had a good time.
Yes, indeed.
And if you missed that show, thank God to Morris Media, it's online.
Yes.
So you don't have to watch it because we're not doing any song and dance. We're just talking. So the beauty about what we do, you can listen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very educational.
Very educational, very informative, and
yes,
two right. outstanding African Americans from this city
yes.
that made their life's work here.
Yes,
and
indeed.
So they've impacted many.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, yes. So thank you for letting me do that, Skip. And so I'm going to give it over to you so you can introduce our special guest tonight.
You know what? I would really like to introduce our guests, but what I would like to do is just maybe say their name, and if they could say something brief about themselves, and I'll tell you later why I invited these two here. So I'll start with Richie Success. And if you, well, I can say that the one thing I know about Richie, is that she wrote a book while incarcerated. And there's so many different things that I know she's doing. And if you could take a minute or so or less to introduce yourself, we can go to Cam and then we can get started with our dialogue.
My name is Richie Success, and I was currently released from incarceration. I changed my life around. I'm an ex-gang member. I started writing books in the penitentiary, and I'm trying to pave the way for others to change like I did.
All right. Thank you for that. And Kamala?
Yes, my name is Kamala Russell, and I've been recently released from prison after doing 12 and a half years. I've been home 2 months. Not that I was in a gang, but I have come from a dysfunctional background, and I've learned how to deal with that dysfunction and heal it so that I won't continue to repeat it. And also, it's become my passion to just share what I've learned with others in the hopes that they could find some kind of hope and come out of it themselves.
Yes, indeed. Thank you both for that.
And we're so happy that you came tonight, because we had this hour set aside for you to share your stories with us. And we are going to talk about that. But unfortunately, we have to deal with the business at hand. Absolutely. And her name is Autumn Johnson.
Yes.
The one-year-old baby that was murdered in Compton just the other day. Never had a chance. And, you know, family, you know, at 1 year old, she hadn't been around here long enough to be guilty of anything.
Right. Sister, you know, Charles Boyd from the Urban League shared something with me one day, that it was an old African proverb or a tradition, I'm sorry, African tradition, that when the hunters and the warriors would go out, when they're coming back in, they would greet the other hunters and warriors, and they would ask them the one question, how are the children? Mm. And the answer should be, all is well.
All is well.
All is well. Yes. And if the answer is not all is well, then it's time for all the warriors to not go out, but to get together and find out, how do we protect the children? How do we do?
Right.
Because everything they did was for the children.
Right.
So for all the warriors who are listening, all is not well.
No, it's not well at all. Right. Not well at all. And the shame is on us, because we have allowed this madness to continue unchecked. You know, when you have organizations like the Watts Gang Task Force and Southern California Ceasefire, and we're committed to making an impact, and men like Skip and the other men that have been on the show, Twin and Taco and Bishop and Jaime, you know, you guys go out on the front line and try to become peacemakers.
Right.
You see, and the problem is, we don't have peacemakers everywhere we need them.
Right.
Family, because our apathy allows us to continue. We as a people don't care enough of how many of our children have actually paid this ultimate price.
Right.
Our whole thing seems to be, well, it didn't happen over here.
Right.
It didn't happen in my family. I feel bad, but
right.
I'm okay as long as I stay over here. And we really have to understand, that one-year-old baby is our child.
Yes, she is.
She didn't just belong to her mother and her father and her grandparents. She belonged to our village.
Yes.
And if we say we have a village, then we need to be acting like village people instead of allowing our young people to run amok, run wild, come out with the intent to kill.
Right.
Because they didn't come home to go, they didn't leave the house to go to the store.
No.
They left the house with that mission in mind, to come on that block and shoot in that property.
Right. It's really, truly a tragedy. And what's so tragic about it is, this isn't the first time we've been here.
No.
Talib Pikante.
Yes.
There was a young child. I forget her name. I know you remember it. She was in the jungles. We stood there together at the press conference. The little young baby, Hispanic baby.
Oh, Caitlin Avila.
Caitlin Avila.
Little 3-year-old Caitlin Avila.
Right. So how many times have we been?
Oh, my God.
If we just count the times that me and you have been here for the children, not even counting the numerous times that this has happened to children that we weren't there, because there was another time in Newton Division where the man was holding the baby in his arms, and that baby was killed as well. And it's just, it's too many times, sister. And what I really like about right now, this time, is this woke up the nation.
Yes.
The nation is awake.
Yes. I got, there's a man on Facebook, and his name is Muhammad the Mortician. And he buries, he's the funeral director that receives a lot of our young men. And he's the one that has to do the cutting, right. You see, and the preparation for that final destination. Right. And so what he does, sometimes he posts the pictures of our Y scars cut across our shoulders, go down past our navel, these horrific photos of 17, 18, 19-year-old men that are being murdered in his community. So he had posted a story. He's in Jersey. He's on the East Coast in Jersey. First, I thought he was in Philadelphia, and I actually checked last night to be sure. But he's on the East Coast. He posted the story about Autumn.
Wow.
So they know about it where he is.
Right.
And when I saw it, I posted a comment about it, that yes, we are outraged, because people want to know where is our outrage.
Right. Right. And we are outraged. And you know what? I want to get the guests into this, because one of the things that I know is I felt these last couple of days that I've been talking to a wall. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm exhausting all resources, all conversation. And so by both of you just coming from incarceration, this time last year you were both incarcerated. What are some of the dialogues when the conversation about the violence that happens in the community, what is it that it would take? Because these are children.
Yes,
and I always ask the ladies that are incarcerated, how many of you have children?
Mm-hmm.
Because our children are killing our children.
That's right.
So I want to get both of you in the dialogue on what are some of the conversations that go on behind the violence while you guys are incarcerated. I'll start with you, Cam.
Thank you. So some of the conversations we've had in there that I've been a part of about the violence out in the streets is that it needs to be, the issue at heart needs to be identified. So what is it that I am running from that is hurting me so bad that's causing me to go out there and harm another person to not deal with my own hurt?
Right.
So I think that's where the core issue stems from. I mean, nobody is telling you to identify what hurt you or to even address what hurt you or who hurt you.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times it starts within the home, you know, that abandonment, the neglect, the mom and dad not being there for whatever the reason may be, maybe even some incest abuse, something caused it and you didn't talk about it. So it's just sitting in there festering and poisoning you. So I truly believe that it is very important to identify that and talk about it so that you're not out there running around trying to cause someone else harm because you're hurting so bad.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where the conversations will pretty much stem from, and we just go from there with it.
What about you, Richie? Was there conversations about violence? I know there's a lot of violence in there, a lot of fights and things of that nature. So what were some of the conversations about was in the violence?
Well, it's kind of about self-awareness. You know, we talk about in there what's wrong with us and why are we the way we are. So that's where the violence came from, because when we raise kids, we're raising them and we're teaching them what we know. And if we only know negativity, that's where it stems from. You know, it's about us. So when I was incarcerated, the main goals that we focus on was what's wrong with us, how were we raised, and what can we do to better ourselves so we can raise the kids. So the kids, because the kids are our future. So however we raise these kids is the way that the future is going to be. So if we can't change ourselves, then it's going to be hard for us to change and help someone else.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's so critical about this is that I go into the prison, and I myself at one time was in prison, and I feel like I want to free everybody. I want to help them get help.
Yes.
But when we come to a situation where Autumn is asleep, I want that person to do life. Yes. I feel like that is the most horrible person in the world. But when I walk into a prison, I see people. I don't see inmates. I see people, and I see a good spirit, and I see how I can help people. But when this happens, I totally change, and I'm ready to say this person is a foul individual and needs to never walk the streets again. So I'm in this mixed emotion right now.
Let me put a pin in that, see, because the shooters are still on the loose.
Yes.
Somebody clearly knows who they are because it was a very distinct car. And when we have a car like that, people pay attention to it, okay, because it's unusual. It hasn't been my understanding that drive-bys use cars like that. They usually use what we call a burner car, something innocuous and unidentifiable, and more or less leave it parked. They don't ride around in the street in it. They don't go to the store. They keep it in a certain place to bring out when they need it for that purpose. Well, this was a kind of pristine-looking car that these guys decided to drive down that street and kill, shoot, and end up killing that innocent child. So the point being is that the community has to be proactive in catching them.
Right.
If they have friends that don't want to get that heat on themselves,
right,
maybe their friends should just use a payphone. They don't want the reward.
Or like in the case of Aaron Shannon, young five-year-old, wanted to be Superman for Halloween.
Yes. Spider-Man.
Yes. He wanted to be Spider-Man. And it was actually the community that was on their bumpers. Like, hey, y'all better turn yourselves in before we do something bad to you.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's one of those type of situations where, you know what, this is such a horrible act that I cannot protect anyone in this community who would kill a child.
No.
And how many times are we going to know about child killers living amongst us?
That's right. And that is the point. You know, that is the point, because by now they know that they are baby murderers.
Right.
And you would think if they had any substance in themselves, they would do the right thing and turn themselves in. But by now we know they're hiding. And right. Once you hide, the intent is to get away with it.
Right.
And that's the last thing we want them to consider. They are not going to get away with this. The community is not going to allow it. Compton is not going to have that just as a free will. You get to go home, get you a cheeseburger, go watch the Lakers play. Uh-uh.
Right.
No.
Right.
Go ahead.
And sometimes you have to put yourself in the parent's shoes or the kid's shoes of, you know, what if it was your family member? What if it was your little daughter? What if it was your sister? You know, you can't change violence with violence. So sometimes you just got to do the right thing and make the right move and decision to stand up and be a leader, even if it's an anonymous leader.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important, because I always say in different classes that I do that, you know, if there's a Brinks truck outside, and me and Sister Heron been watching this truck for a while, and we go and take all the money out the trunk, and I get caught, and I say, Sister, they caught us.
Yeah,
no,
they caught us.
No, they caught me. I'm telling at that point. I'm snitching. You know, I should let Sister get away with the money, whatever. But here's the case.
Not without you.
But here's the case. But in a situation where this is child murders, this is actually protecting our community. We need protection from people like that.
Right.
That is not snitching.
No.
We need the protection of people to say, you know what, we're not going to allow you to kill a child. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, one of the worst things that happened to people in the men's central jail and in prison, you cannot be a baby killer.
No.
You cannot be a baby killer. A baby killer will be dealt with inside the jail. They will have to keep moving around. And when they get to prison, they'll have to go to a special needs yard and stay there amongst others, because it's just not allowed, because of exactly for what you said, Richie, it's just not allowed.
And truthfully, if the street had any inkling, they would take care of it.
Yes.
See, because this is the usual pattern. You know, when you hurt me, I hurt back. Mm-hmm. You see, that's the way retaliation works. You hit my block, I'm coming after yours. You see, so we've had a lot of innocent folks killed in that phenomena because they were standing or in close proximity of the intended target.
Right. And, you know, even as we speak right now, Sister, at 1714 East Palmer, there's a candlelight vigil that's going on for young Autumn. And I just want to send my condolences to the family and to everyone who was out there and sharing in that experience right now. It must be horrible. I've been to candlelight vigils when they were young people, the 16-year-olds, the 18-year-olds, but for it to be a one-year-old, it's a horrible experience. Not even being related to that baby, it's a feeling that I don't ever want to feel again. And, you know, I just want to take my hat off to everybody who's doing something to help this madness stop.
This is what we need to be doing. This is a proactive element that the Black nation needs to wake up to. These are our babies we're burying. These are our children that are on the detour, on their way to the prison and then from there to the cemetery. If we can get you in there, whichever comes first is okay. Right. And it seems to be just a process that our kids are targeted for that. And then when you look at it, that it was our children that killed this baby, right. And we're going to sit by and say nothing?
That's what embarrasses me.
There it is, right there.
That's what embarrasses me. So I don't want to take the focus off of Autumn, but I do want to bring you both in and talk about, you know, some of the things that have helped you with your transition to coming home, because
We get to that, because that's the good news end of it. I want to start at the beginning. You don't have to tell any details, but what I'm looking for is, what was your process? What was your motivation at that time that you ended up locked up?
Right. That's what I was going to say, because I was going to say, okay, if any violence in your offense, this is exactly what we're talking about.
Right.
If there's if there's violence in my offense, why? Why be violent? I think Kamala hit so well on the head, you know, not what I'm running to, but what am I running from? I can't identify. So,
there it is.
Yeah, we both have the same question.
Yeah, because you know what? Our audience could look at you and just be, oh, no, they didn't.
Right.
No, not these two.
Right.
They went to prison. They actually have been in lockup. And, you know, that's the remarkable response we get when we get a chance to talk to you. Everybody's surprised.
Right. So what about you, Richie? If you can just go back and don't tell us any streets or what happened or nothing like that. But, you know, what was some of the mentality? What was your way of thinking back 7.5, 8 years ago?
Well, my mentality was survival. You know, I had to do what I had to do to survive in the streets. And I was raised to live a certain lifestyle. So I ran with it. And that's all I knew. And I didn't see nothing at the end of the tunnel. You know, so before incarceration, it was just, I was living life with no meaning, pretty much.
How old were you?
I was 20, but I've been incarcerated in and out of jail since I was 12, and I've never been on the streets for more than 6 months. I was 12.
12. See, it really started at 12.
Yeah.
Something went wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me ask it this way. Was it your environment? Was it your peers? Or was it you? Or a combination of any of those?
I would say it was me, because I was raised in a good household with law enforcement. My family is law enforcement, and I just wanted to do something different. Yeah. I didn't want to follow the same footsteps, so I chose to go my own direction, and my own direction was to the gangs and to the streets. So I followed it, and I followed it off what I was taught. So what I was taught was to be wild and follow suit, you know, follow the leader.
But when you say you were taught,
not the leader.
That was your peers that taught you that, not home.
Yeah, not home, not at all.
Okay, we want to make that distinction.
Yeah, not
because
at home.
The amazing thing in some of our stories, you do have a good home.
Right.
You see, but you know, it's, at some point, you don't care. It's like, I don't want to hear that. And the truth is, when my kids hit the same age, they didn't want to hear me either.
Yeah.
Right.
They didn't want to hear me either, so I'm just trying to help us understand what the beginning was for you, where that thought process came into play, and you were very clear about it. I had a good home, but I was thinking about something else.
Right, right. And then, Kamala, I know that totally different background, educated, and one time in and one time only. So go back 13 years ago, 14 years ago, what type of mentality did you have? What was it that you were running from?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I can even go back further than 14 years ago. I could go back possibly like 30 years ago. So I was running from, I'll be 40 in 2 weeks. So I mean, it's funny because since I've been home, I get a lot of like, no, you were not in prison for 12 and a half years.
Nobody would believe that.
Yeah, I was. Mm-hmm. I've been home a little over 2 months. Mm-hmm. So what I was running from was some hurt that I did not know how to identify, which my hurt was incest. So it was within the family. Nobody talked about it. It was a norm. So then I turned 27. I'm in this relationship, raising my two children, a stepdaughter, and I get pregnant with my third pregnancy. And these feelings start coming back up, and I did not know what to do with them. So my stepdaughter bore the brunt of all of it. You know, she reminded me of myself. I was angry. I felt that it was my fault that my incest took place because I allowed it. At one point, I went from disliking it to liking it because it was the only love and affection that I was receiving as a six-year-old child. So as a teenager, I start feeling very guilty and very shame-filled because I shouldn't have liked that. I shouldn't have allowed it. You know, today I know now that I had no part in that. It was not my responsibility. It was not my fault at all. It was solely my abuser's fault.
That's right.
Right.
So I do know that today.
You know, the shame is that incest does happen, but we as a people, we don't acknowledge it.
Yes, we don't want to talk about it.
You know, we do not. That's the last thing we want to talk about.
And at 27, that was the very last thing I wanted to talk about. Definitely. So I was seeking some kind of control. I was seeking some kind of power and trying to just be in okay with everything that I struck out and harmed my stepdaughter. So that's what happened at that time at 27. Today, I've learned to talk about it and heal it for myself. You know, I believed at one point that I had to take my family along on this journey, and that's not the case. The journey is mine, and I had to break that cycle, and that's what I've done today. So I talk about it simply for healing and also to empower myself and hopefully empower another person to be like, hey, I suffered that same thing too. Yeah. And maybe that's what I'm running from. And I don't have to continue to act this way.
Yeah.
I don't continue to have to harm other people or more so harm myself.
Right.
Because I was harming myself also in harming, you know, Karina and everyone else.
You were hurt. Like Skip says all the time, hurt people.
Absolutely.
And you were hurting.
Right. So this is a teachable moment because what then for those young people who are being touched or bothered, molested, what then should they do? Because also inside there, I've met so many. Let me tell you, sister, I have this one class where they do a healing letter, and it make me want to run out the room when they talk about the abuse that they had suffered at the hands of others.
Right.
So I really don't know what to say, but what could you say to ladies who are going through sexual abuse and incest?
Because or even mothers that may have single mothers that have their children susceptible to that kind of thing, you know?
Absolutely. So it's funny because I was just talking about this yesterday. I know growing up, I was warned that if a stranger does something to me to
Stranger
danger, absolutely, Skip.
Yes.
So I was never warned if a family member hurts you to tell. So I think that that's where it comes into play at. It's not about a stranger. It's if anyone touches you or harms you inappropriately, let's teach our children to start telling it. Because if I was taught that, I would have told it as a six-year-old child. I started abusing Karina, and she was 5 and a half. She would have told it. She didn't.
Right.
I started talking about my incest. I mean, I talked about it every day to my children. My daughter was touched inappropriately at 5. Guess what? She went right home and told my sister. It was a one-time incident. It never happened again.
That's
thank
good.
God.
Thank
right. So again, right. that cycle have started to be broken. So I truly believe that if we teach our children to talk about, to tell if anyone harms them, it's not about a stranger because 80% of situations are happening within homes.
Right.
It's family members hurting each other.
Family members.
Whether it be
and friends,
incest, whether it be abandonment, whether it be just be simple neglect. It's happening within the home, and we're not teaching our children to talk about it.
Right,
we're
right.
teaching them to deal with it. It's becoming
like
a norm.
We're more afraid that somebody's going to find out.
And also probably to be judged. Like, what are people going to think if they find out about this? Well, guess what? What are they going to think when your child does something that now everybody knows about?
Well, who's important in the scenario?
And
the
that's
victim
something we have
or
to
the
think
victimizer?
About also.
I mean, really, you know, this is the same. It goes back to Autumn.
Well, here they come out the same home. See, the victim and suspect come out the same home.
Absolutely.
Just in the case of Autumn as well, because these individuals probably don't live far. So these are our children, and our children are being victims. They're being victimized over again repeatedly, and then they become abusers. So the victim eventually becomes an abuser because there's no outlet. So,
absolutely.
You know, when we talk about having this type of mentality in the same home, how do we address it? Because I always ask people, how many kids you have? And when they raise their hand, I say, now, how many of you have ugly kids? And that's important because they may not be physically ugly.
No.
They may be spiritually ugly.
And,
they
and
may
that's
have
really
ugly,
what you're trying to say.
That's
spiritually ugly.
Spiritually
we don't
ugly.
Care if they have a wart on their nose.
No,
that's
I'll
not
put
the
a
kind
hat
of ugly
on
we're talking about.
Some makeup or something. But no, we're talking about spiritually ugly. We're talking about that. And if I cannot identify the fact that I have a spiritually ugly child, it's because I'm covering up the fact that I'm a spiritually ugly father and that I don't have the skills, the tools to help my child do any better.
There it is. Right. And we're headed to break. You know, that was a pretty fast 30 minutes. And
I thought it was 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's been 30 minutes.
Okay, 30 minutes.
So we'll be back.
More Maurice Ward.
God bless you, community family, once again. Welcome to Gang Talk, second half. You know, we call it family business because slavery made us family. In case you young folks don't know, there's no way by us being bought and sold and bred and separated for us to really know who's in our family and who's not. So we have every right to treat this as family business, and that's what it is. So as we come back, we want to update you because they are having the vigil for one-year-old Autumn Johnson right now at this moment, and Skip just got word that it's a huge crowd out there. So we wanted to share that with your family because we want you to be motivated, to be concerned about this, to be one of those that goes out and shows up.
Right.
Don't just say, oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
And sit on your hands. No, say, I'm sorry, and I want to get involved.
But also, let's do something beyond this as well. Because one of the things that I always talk about, and here's another young name, Trayvon Martin.
Yes.
So when Trayvon Martin was killed, we rally, we march
over here
in the Mert Park, and we do that. But let me tell you what happened about 14 months later. Young Trayvon Jackson was murdered on Hyde Park in Fourth Ave. And there was no march, no rally.
Right, there was no march.
There was no rally. There was no people upset. So let's not just get involved because this is national news. Let's get involved and continue to do something each and every day. And a lot of people will say, well, there's no funding for this, no funding for that. Do you know, sister, I know you know, and I know, how many people do this for free? As a matter of fact, raise your hand if you do it for free. See, here we are right here. So there are people who actually spend their entire life, and what's so crazy about it is we know those people because we sit in the same center, we sit at the same meetings.
Yes.
When we go to the meetings, we see the same people.
Yes.
Because we are the ones who do it for free, and we're there, but we need new people.
Yes,
we need new people to come in.
Yes.
And take this charge as well.
Well, we need the village to act like they're a part of this.
Right.
We're not working outside somebody else's neighborhood. We're working right here in yours.
Right.
In ours.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not on the foreign soil. It's right here in the streets of Los Angeles.
Yes, it
is. And Skip, we have been on too many bloody corners.
Yes, we have.
Okay, the outrage is because it's a one-year-old. But you are absolutely right. There have been so many killed in this city. And the disgrace for us, we don't care because they're teenagers. You see, we
kind of—
What's
Tevin's last name? Tevin. What's his
Tevin
last
Price?
Name?
Tevin Price. You mean Price. Tevin Price, killed over the red Florence. Tennis shoes right up the street from us on Florence and Crenshaw.
All right.
Yes,
stop
killed in broad
right.
daylight
in front
and
of
shot
his mother.
In front of his mother. Okay.
Right.
And so the community was right. so outraged. The police, even the gang members on that corner, were not going to let that go unchecked.
Right.
They let it be known that they had nothing to do with this. So we have to give them credit for stepping away from that and denouncing the ones that killed Tavin.
Yes.
They had nothing to do with that. So those were four rogues. And
right.
shamefully, one of them was a young girl.
Right.
And she's the one that tried to do the witness intimidation with
right.
her foolishness. You have just killed this mentally challenged young man for no reason except
right.
red, really? When that's a four corners that has several colors that come through there.
Right.
So it was confusing to me because I thought that was red territory.
No.
Then somebody said, no, that's blue territory.
But the thing is, the young man who did it was seen on Facebook, and he wears so much red. He's on Facebook with red everything on, but he, you know, I mean, I don't want to talk about the ignorance. That's
no.
the ignorant side of it. But I really want to mention the babies, that we are
right.
losing so many of our children,
right.
and these are our children. And as much as I have this bitterness, and I hate to have bitterness for someone,
yes,
but
yes,
I have a bitterness.
Hard.
I have a hatred for people who hurt our children.
Yes.
I really do, and I have to work on that.
No, why wouldn't you? You see, look, I have to be honest. I've been at this a long time, and you know, we've had babies killed before.
Yes.
And didn't get the kind of attention that they deserved.
Right.
You see, and they have been Aaron Shannon, little 8-year-old Jasmine Sanders,
right.
killed by her 13-year-old cousin.
Right on the stairs, 76
yes.
in San Pedro.
Right across from Fremont
oh,
High School.
My God.
You
right.
see, so we have been through these horrors.
She just wanted to get up the stairs.
That
remember,
she was outside. Ashley.
I got to stop.
Well, she was actually out in the courtyard with the grown kids.
Right.
Out there on her bicycle with her brother and just hanging out because the teenagers were out there.
Right.
She was 8 years old in her own home,
right.
in the front of her own home. But the sad thing is that her cousin had an issue with one of the 18-year-olds in the courtyard because he had physically assaulted the 13-year-old sister.
Mm.
So the 13-year-old came with his 14-year-old escort to get justice the only way he knew.
Right.
You see, and instead of killing the one he was trying to get, that
yes.
bullet killed his cousin, you see.
Right.
And so his life is forever.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Change. He's going to be in lockup for a while and under.
Well, not just him, but her mother. And if I remember that story correctly, she did run up the stairs as she was trying to get to her mother. I don't know if she had already been shot or what, but I remember standing out there, and that was the first time that I cried.
Yes.
Behind, you know, and I've had the tough skin, but when that one, you know, because my daughters who are 16 now.
Right.
They were the same age, so
right.
we're talking about 2007,
wow.
and I told Sergeant Scott, I'm like, man, these are my daughter's age.
Right.
And it's just horrible. All right, change the subject. How about those Broncos? I don't know, man.
Oh, let's not talk about football.
Well, I don't
know. No. Look, unless you want to talk about halftime and Beyonce and all
okay.
the pushback, she's getting
right.
for what she
exactly.
did. And I, hey, look, I ain't mad. I ain't
right.
mad at her. No.
Right, right,
I was really
right.
happy about that. I wasn't happy with the outcome of the game.
Right.
But
at least
is,
she took a stand.
Yes, she
and
did.
And you know, about 3 or 4 years ago, one of my mentors, Harry Belafonte, mm-hmm. he said something about Beyonce and Jay-Z. He said that they have too much influence and power to not take chances to influence
right.
the world
right.
to be better.
Yes.
You know, he says, use your art form. And this is where I get it from, that as an artist, it is an obligation to change the world using your art.
Right.
And he actually, it cost him his career
yes, it did.
To fund Martin Luther King Jr. and do all the things he did. You know, people
Civil
like Sidney, right? Sidney Poitier kept excelling, and Harry Belafonte didn't, because he stood out against everything.
Well, he spoke against the problems that were happening then, and Sidney didn't.
Right.
Okay, let's just leave it like that. Harry was on the front line about civil rights, and Sidney wasn't.
But Beyonce took that chance, even though it's 4 or 5 years later, she took that chance. So my hat is off to her. I still wouldn't pay $2,500 to go see her in concert.
Well, no, but we got to see it on video. We got to see it on TV. Like I said, I'm not mad at her because it's the 50th anniversary of the Black Panthers.
Yes.
So I was really proud of her
for acknowledging that
in our Black History Month.
Yes,
okay,
indeed.
So those that don't like it, boo-hoo. Okay, let's move on, get back to what's so important here. And I had asked you a question while we were at break. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay, what was it?
Was it me influencing myself to do negative things, or was it my peers? Mm-hmm. You know, and today I'm aware it was myself. It was my actions, it was everything about me. Because I've never really been a follower. You know, I kind of made my own path, but
did you have friends that were doing bad things at that time too?
I did.
Were you hanging out with them and helping?
Yeah, I was kind of the leader. I was kind of the leader, and
a
little bit in some areas. I was kind of the leader, and I was the one that said, "Come on, let's go do this and do that," and they followed.
They followed.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and today I want to use qualities that I have to steal people to get to follow, but just in a positive way.
A better way.
Okay, so like what? Like what kind of ways? Because I know you wrote a book. What are some of the other things you're doing positive?
Well, when I was incarcerated, I was talking to youth, you know, and I'm trying to get involved with that. I've only been home, today makes a month, you know, so as this month's passed, I've been getting myself together. So I can start reaching out, because I can't get nobody else to follow until I'm fully on my feet and leading by example 100%.
Right.
So.
Okay. And what about you, Kamala? What are some of the things that you have going on in the future to help others?
Well, right now what I'm doing is I can't help anyone else until I help myself. So
yes.
I've enrolled in college, studying to be a psychologist. So that's what my major is, in psychology. And my desire is to learn more about myself, my mind frame, so that I can never and will never cause more harm to anyone else. Mm-hmm. So in learning that, what I plan on doing with others, I've been sharing my stories with others. Like, I keep finding these moments to just share my story with someone. And lo and behold, they're like, wow, I needed to hear that, because I didn't know how to deal with that anger and the way I yell at my child or this or that. So even though sometimes I hold back or I feel that little shame, a little bit, it still sits there. I'm able to share that story and it touches someone. So it's empowering me to continue to move forward in it, in spite of whatever shame that arises.
Right.
In spite of the past and all the pain that I caused, I can continue to help others.
Right.
So that's my desire. And also, just again, like I was saying earlier, I think it is so important to educate our children and encourage them to tell if anyone hurts them.
Right.
Like, that is at the core of my heart. Like, I need that to be out there for everybody. I need that message to be out there to every child, to every parent, to every father, grandparent. I mean, if it happened to you, encourage your children to talk about it. Encourage
Absolutely.
Your nieces and your nephews, your sisters and your brothers, your neighbors. If someone is hurting you, if someone touches you inappropriately, tell. If it's mom, if it's dad, if
right.
it's your brother, your sister,
and you know
grandma
what?
Or grandpa, we have to tell it.
Yes, and you have to tell them there's no shame
Absolutely,
in their telling.
Absolutely, yes,
it's
because
really
that's
gonna,
where the damage comes in at.
There it is.
That shame had me just
right.
brittled and heavy with ugliness and darkness, and I was so gone. I was completely hopeless that I did not care. I could honestly tell you, 13 years ago, I did not care. I didn't think twice about harming an innocent child. I didn't.
So let me ask you, have there been any challenges, any obstacles that you've had to face, maybe some of the difficult ones that, since you've been home? Because I hear a lot about Prop 47. I hear a lot about SB 260, SB 261, and there are lawmakers law enforcement who are really nervous and saying that this is the uptick of why crime has gone up, because we're letting so many people out of jail. And so are they?
The truth is they lock too many people up.
Right.
Okay. It's an overcrowding that gave us Prop 47, because if you can't take care of the capacity, then they should.
Well, it's
be
a big
there.
Money business, sister, and they did it for money, and you and it's capitalistic society, and they did it for money. But now that we have individuals at home, what are we gonna do?
Well, the truth is, they created products to fill those privatized places.
Right.
So they didn't just get there on their own. Circumstances were already in place.
Systematic.
Thank you.
And that's what Larry Aubrey always says, that he says it has to be systemic. Whatever you do has to be systemic. It cannot just be one shot fits all. It has to be a systematic change.
Right.
So, but I know there are challenges and obstacles, and I want to get ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the biggest challenges and obstacles? Because maybe I can help. Maybe I can do something about it. Maybe people who are watching, listening can do something about it. So,
that's why they're here, to tell their story, let folks know that our women do get caught up. But then they come home. Right. What have they learned? That you don't want to go back, and you want to make sure people you know don't get caught up.
I need to hear that from her. You don't want to go back, right?
Oh, I'm not going back.
Okay, say that. Say it with confidence.
I'm not going back.
Say it with confidence.
And that's the kind of news we want you to share.
Right.
You've been through this horrific experience, whatever got you there, but it was a horror. Now you're back. The determination is not to return. The system is expecting you. Excuse me. I didn't mean to, but this stuff kind of gets in my blood. They have told men at their release, oh, we'll see you when you get back.
Yes, I heard that a lot when I was leaving out of there. Before I left, while I was there, I heard it a lot. And also, you said a word that I live by, determination. First of all, I had to wake up and start my healing process. And once that began, I was determined to continue to move forward in spite of it all. But not only to move forward, I was determined to understand why I was behaving that way.
Yes.
And that still took a couple of years to identify. Yeah. And it boils down to my incest. The incest really was my damaging piece. You know, that was my double-edged sword. I didn't know which way to go, because the very family that I loved and looked up to and admired, that's where it happened at. So I had some mixed emotions.
Right.
And I was raised to be very independent, but very codependent upon my family. So that was a little mixed feelings, too. But the determination came about for me to do something different and be something different and hopefully be able to teach someone something different. Right. You know, and I've learned to accept people for who they are, where they're at in their life. I don't have to like what they do, and I'm not going to enable it, but I'm going to move forward. And if you want to move forward with me, jump on this train, you know?
You know what? You just said something very important. So I'm thinking of expectations. Were there expectations of you when you came home? Does the family have some expectations, or did you have some expectations of them?
So I think it could have been some expectations on both sides. I know I expected my family to just make sure I had everything I needed financially, and that was an unrealistic expectation on my part.
You said financially.
Financially, yeah.
Right,
you know,
like there's
I was
a
like,
box of money
absolutely.
Here,
you know, just make sure I have everything I want and need, and that was very unrealistic of me and very selfish. Also, I realized. So it took me a couple of weeks to be like, Kamala, stop. And just receive the help that's right in front of you.
Right.
And for me, I was having a difficult time receiving that help from other people because I expected it from my family, my bloodline. So, like I said, it's been a little over 2 months, and I've identified that quickly and moved on and received the help that was right in front of me. And lo and behold, I'm not without anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak on the expectations of my family because I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I'm sure they probably did have some expectations. I mean, for one, all of my family is in Riverside County, and I'm in Los Angeles County, so I'm away from them. So I'm sure they probably had some expectations for me to get out there and help out. I mean, I have some grandparents that are sick. My mother's sick, so I'm stuck here and they're there.
Let's just leave it here, because I would think that their expectation would be that you wouldn't have been locked up.
Right.
Okay,
well, I would
let's
hope
just
so.
You know, whatever we did, we didn't expect that result.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we just leave everybody Because you're still working through this.
Absolutely.
And we're just so happy that you're home and seeing things much clearer than you were when you got in there.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
You see, and so this is where I want you to come on and tell us, because you was a little young, wild child.
A wild thing.
Yeah, right. Let that puberty just snatch you out from under that law enforcement background and throw you out in the street to, you know, do crazy things. Oh, we got 10 minutes, so come on, girl. Speak to the youngins. That's what I want you to do.
Well,
speak to the youngins.
Before my incarceration, you know, I was a at-risk youth, you know. Mm. So I never seen nothing wrong with how I was living my life until I went to prison. And honestly, when I went to prison, I didn't even see nothing wrong with it. I was ready to just ride or die, you know. But my experience in there, it was my gang killing my father. That's what really opened my eyes, you know. I lived for my gang, and they took my dad away from me. So at the end of the day, I realized right then and there, it was no loyalty. Right. And no one cared about me, and I was nobody to them. So at that point, I realized, well, you know what? It's time to work on myself, you know. And I lost my dad, and I lost my grandmother. And that's what made me say, you know what? I'm grown now, you know. I knew when I got out at 28, I would be starting my life. You know, because I wasted 28 years of life. So now I'm starting my life. So I pretty much worked on myself behind bars, you know. I started going to groups. That's where I met Skip at.
Yeah.
And he inspired me. He made me believe that it was okay to stop gangbanging. Mm-hmm. You know, he made me. He's the only person I've ever met that was like, I used to be in the streets, but I'm different. And it was so normal to him. So I was like, wow. I used to ask him questions like, so you just don't.
Yeah.
No, you didn't believe me for a while, too. You remember that time when you didn't believe me? And you came and she jammed me up one day. She said, come here, I want to talk to you. Yeah. They say you still out there with the business.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. I'm not. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Here with your business. Well, family, let me kind of update you. Skip goes into the women's prison on Wednesday and teaches an anger management class. Yeah. And so we're so proud of him because they let him come home when he's through. They don't try to keep him.
Yeah, okay. They let me out.
The ladies would like for him to stay to keep talking to him, but they don't put the handcuffs on him and throw him in a cell.
And he really inspires a lot of people. Yeah. You know, like, It's amazing, and I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy that I'm part of this movement, you know, because it's really helping me with my change, you
We're
know.
We're happy too.
And it's pretty much, you know, you gotta evaluate your life and realize what is it gonna take for you to be normal and really be happy. You know, when I say normal, people say, well, what's normal?
Yeah.
Normal is not what I was doing. Mm-hmm. That's not normal. It is common.
Right.
It is a part of the lifestyle, but, you know, the main thing I realized about myself is I was brainwashed. Mm. I was brainwashed thinking that was normal, to go out there and hurt people for colors and take people's hard-earned money. You know, so with doing that, I'm just thankful that I'm here, and I'm not peer pressured. As I step out, you know, I'm trying to get my clothing line together. I'm trying to go to film school. I want to go to film school. That's my biggest goal.
Good.
You know, I'm trying to find the right school. I'm trying to do whatever it takes. Film is my number one priority besides taking care of myself.
It's coming, you know, because we have a lot of natural stories in our communities, and what we need is our storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already shown that you're capable because you wrote a book. You didn't just sit around banging on the bars every day, oh, poor as me. You got busy and got a redirection already established for yourself while you were in there. And so these are the success stories we're looking for.
Yes.
The biggest success story is we don't want you going in there anyway.
Right.
But if you do, we want you to come out and find something better than what put you in there and kept you there.
That's
our hope.
And my grandmother always told me, every letter, at every end of the phone call, do the time and don't let the time do you.
That's it.
You know, and I use incarceration as a stepping stool. You know, I've wrote 7 books. Actually, only got one published on Amazon.com. It's called Love Don't Pay the Bills.
All right.
Support the movement, you know.
That's all right. It's on Amazon. Look, did you hear
Amazon.
That? Love Don't Pay the Bills.
Love Don't
it's
pay
on Amazon.com. Go ahead, girl.
Yes, indeed. That's really big. And that's one of the things that made me gravitate to her, because I saw there's so many people that had exact attitude you were talking about. They would sit up, woe is me, they won't come to group. And, you know, I find myself chasing them around the yard and sending notes and messages. Man, tell them to come to my group. And then when I see their family on the streets and they're like, I know. You know, and it's really sad, because there is help, and there are individuals. These aren't the only two, as you know. You've met others before.
I've met a few.
Right, that come home. Happy to meet them, because they're good people.
Yes. But, it's like they're coming out of a nightmare. Mm. I'm awake now.
Absolutely.
I was in a nightmare. I didn't realize I was in a nightmare until I woke up.
Did you see
nightmare.
The expression when
yes.
you said that?
It's a nightmare.
I'm like, oh, yeah.
It's a nightmare, you know?
Yeah.
But the awakening is what was so important for me and very profound. Yes. Like, it was an awakening. Like, I really feel like I am just now beginning the rest of my life. Like, my eyes are open and I am, it's clear. I clearly can see everything right in front of me. It's not a cloud anymore.
Have you guys ever been in that back room where Jonathan Mumm and April Atkins is in the back? Okay, you're not there now. Because if we were there, we'd still have that gate around us.
Absolutely.
No. So what's beautiful about this is we can leave.
That's right.
We can
That's
leave.
The
when
best
we're ready,
news.
In another 5 minutes, let's take
walking
a picture
right
and
out
go.
The door.
Let's walk right out the door. The gate opens That's and we leave. News. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And I must say, behind bars is a life within a life. And, you know, some people go in there and they don't never come home. They go in with two years and never come home because they're so stuck in that lifestyle. And
you mean mentally?
Mentally, you know, mentally and physically, they're stuck in there, you know, addicted to drugs and stuff. And when you're out here on the streets, only thing I gotta say is take life for what it is and don't waste it, because there's people in here that's never coming home to freedom.
Right.
You know.
True.
Yeah. And what about you, Kamala? What you want to leave the audience with? Tell them something. They're looking at you through them blue lights, too.
Okay, absolutely. So the one thing I would like to leave the audience with is to just really identify whatever it is that you're running from. Identify it, address it, start that healing process, because if you don't, it's just going to stay infected. Take that Band-Aid off and clean it out from the inside and let it heal and let it become that scar that can now represent something that you could share with someone else. So that's what I want to leave you guys with.
Really powerful, because it reminds me of Superman. You know, he's all this and that or whatever, but he could not deal with his past, which was kryptonite. A small piece of the planet, Krypton, would break him down. Mm-hmm. And all that is a representation of his past.
Yes.
And he could never deal with his past, so he always became weak. So I'm truly grateful that both of you ladies have been able to deal with your past and even speak about it freely or whatever, and it does not break you down anymore. So I'm truly grateful for the both of you. And
thank you.
Truly receptive that you guys were here tonight, and I'm just wish it wasn't such on a down note with going through what we're going through with Autumn, and you know, because that's the only bad thing is being responsible and a responsible person when we leave here. I still hold that in my mind.
Yes.
You know,
thank you for inviting us.
Yes, thank you,
sister.
And the truth is, you know, they're on our side now.
Yes,
where they were before, they you were disconnected from the village people. And we're supposed to be
I don't
want to
be one of the village people, though.
Well,
no, we could be in the village, but don't make me the village people.
I'm talking about the black village, okay? I'm sorry, family, black nation, okay? Because I didn't mean to get it twisted with the village people. That's a song.
Right.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say thank you and how grateful we are in your recovery, and that we're cheering for you. We want you to succeed because at this point, up to where you've been, I call it the detour.
Right.
You guys have been on the detour.
Right.
Now you're back on the path.
Absolutely.
And we're so happy because you're an encouragement for others that may be looking at that detour.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
speak
Thank
to them.
God.
Right.
Real quick, tell that one on the detour, don't go that way.
Get them off. Get them off that wrong road. What do you say to them?
All I would say is some things just can't turn back, you know, so make your next move your best move and think about the future, just not the present.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, indeed.
What I would say to him is I understand. You're not out there. You're not hurting alone. I understand that pain. I understand that confusion. I understand that darkness that you're trying to just run from, but you can't even open up the door. You can't even lift up your head. You're not alone.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, once again, I hear Earth, Wind, and Fire.
You hear
her? I hear her 4 and 5. So I know our time is up, but I'm grateful to hear Maurice White as we close.
Absolutely, absolutely. We adore them and are sorry at his passing, but so grateful you ladies are back and in your right mind and looking for you forward to the great things you're going to do. And I want that book. And when I get that book, you're going to have to autograph it for me.
Yes, that's all right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Sister Heron, for
having us. Thank you, Skip, for bringing our guests. We're really so grateful and so respectful.
Well, I can't see word from nothing.
Social media, right.
What should I say about social media?
Well, you know, they can actually go on morrismedia.studios.com, and they can look at this at any time. And
that's right.
Actually, I've seen it upload to YouTube as well. I've been
that's
on YouTube
true.
And seen
it. Is
it
is on
so,
YouTube as well.
Gang Talk Nation also has a Facebook page, and I was on Facebook last night. I think I posted something about Autumn
you
on
did.
Facebook.
You
so anyone who's interested in following, also Ceasefire, Second Call,
that's
we
right.
all have Facebook. So
that's right.
You can follow us. Social media is very important.
Yes, it is very important nowadays. That's how we stay in touch. So God bless you, family. Thank you for listening. And as Skip said, if you missed any of these episodes, you can find them on at Morris Media
Studios.com.
Uh-huh. And you can find us on YouTube.
Yes.
So, God bless you. Thank you once again.